We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha. Text number 10. Translation. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. When the four previous sons of Brahma, the sages Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana and Sanat Kumara refused to obey their father, Brahma, Brahma was mortified and his anger was manifested in the shape of Rudra. That incident was not forgotten by Brahma. And therefore, the obedience of Manu Swayambhuva was very encouraging. For from the material point of view, the four sages' disobedience to the order of their father was certainly abominable. But because such disobedience was for a higher purpose, they were free from the reaction of disobedience. Those who disobey their fathers on material grounds, however, are surely subjected to disciplinary reaction for such disobedience. Manu's disobedience to his father on material grounds was certainly free from envy. And in the material world, it is imperative for ordinary men to follow the example of Manu. Omajnanatim ranthasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano pishtam sapitam yena bhutale svayam rupakadam ahyam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyacha Kripa Sundhubhya Evacha Palitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Bhavatar Mahadhar Ya Imapuro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamusha Purusha Bhungte Gunan Shodasha Shodasha Atmaka Sohulam Krishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime Hare Krishna, we are continuing our discussion from yesterday. So yesterday, we saw that Brahma was very much pleased by the surrender of Swayambhuva, Manu and his wife. And today, Brahma is continuing his glorification to his son, Swayambhuva, Manu. So this setting is very interesting because first sons of Brahma, the Chatushkumaras, they disobeyed Lord Brahma. So we need to understand the position of Brahma because Brahma is the greatest personality in this universe and he had darshan of the Lord, he had exchanges with the Lord and he got the instructions from the Lord and he was completely empowered with potency to create. And at this point, he created first of his, four of his mental sons. They are the Chatushkumaras. And when they came out from Lord Brahma, they completely disobeyed the instruction which was imparted by Lord Brahma. So it is mentioned that here, Prabhupada writes that Brahma was completely mortified by the response of these Kumaras. They were just young boys and they said, you know, we are not going to do what you said. Straight away they rejected the proposal of Lord Brahma. So Brahma was mortified, and next to come from the body of Brahma are Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa, his wife. So both of them came from the body of Lord Brahma. So both of them surrendered completely unto Lord Brahma. And here Swayambhu Manu mentioned that, look, I am ready to follow anything what you desire without any reservation at all. So there is a complete contrast between the response of Kumaras and the Swayambhu Manu. So that's why Brahma became completely pleased with this response of Swayambhu Manu. It's very interesting, if even if a father or a spiritual master or anyone gives some instruction, if someone doesn't follow, then they become a bit displeased. But when someone follows, they become completely pleased. I was hearing a pastime of Srila Prabhupada in this regard. So back in the days in America, in the beginning time, there was a political party organized by the devotees, the God in We Trust. So they had, you know, they had different candidates, and they used to give public speeches. They used to go for the political rallies and in a political meetings. So this was a pastime narrated by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who is a well-known scholar in ISKCON. So Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was the temple president of one of the temples, and he received a letter from Srila Prabhupada. So this political party was doing pretty well. So they were going, you know, with shikha. Many of them, I think, were wearing kind of devotional cloth, and they had shikha and everything. So they were going and they were presenting their agenda to different political parties, and some of them appreciated. They were saying, okay, what you are presenting makes sense. It was in that level. So they had a favorable response from different groups. So when this was in its peak, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu and different temple presidents that we are going to stop this activity because the devotees are not really matured enough to handle politics and to be in a safer position, being not get affected by the political influences. So Prabhupada said, we are going to stop this activity. Just one letter, that's it. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu read that letter and he thought, you know, what to do. He was a bit disappointed, and he spoke to the political leaders who were the devotees who were carrying forward this mission. So he said, Prabhupada wants to stop this immediately. There is no time, just stop this. So they were also a bit reluctant, but everyone agreed, okay, we had to stop this, so we had to stop this. They stopped the political activities in that particular temple. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu said, he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada. And in this letter, he mentioned that, okay, we have stopped this activities, political activities completely. And we have Lord Jagannath is being installed, and we want to take him for Rath Yatra. So we want to worship the Lord. So this was a letter written by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu to Srila Prabhupada. And in response, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu got a letter which was full of appreciation from Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada wrote to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, look, this is our real activity. Thank you very much for doing this deity worship. And this is our real activity. And at the end of the letter, again thanking, I am very pleased this is activity, and thank you once again for doing the service. So for stopping this and, you know, establishing the deities and worshipping the deities. So Ravindra Swarup Prabhu mentioned that he felt greatly satisfied because getting a letter from Srila Prabhupada with lot of praise and appreciation, and the spiritual masters telling that he is very pleased with this activity. So he felt very much satisfied and very happy to hear that. Later, he found out why Srila Prabhupada was so pleased. So I think that time the secretary was, I think, Shrutakirti Prabhu. So Shrutakirti Prabhu mentioned that So Srila Prabhupada wrote this letter to practically all the temples in America to stop these political activities. So many of them, or most of them, replied back to Srila Prabhupada saying, why do we have to do that? Can we try this? Can we try the other thing? Do we really have to stop this? So they were not really submissive, but they were just trying to, you know, argue, discuss with Srila Prabhupada. So it is not following the order without any question. He's trying to question the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada was a bit upset, this kind of response. But when he got the letter from Ravindrasuru Prabhu saying, okay, we have straight away stopped the activities and now we are focusing on the deity worship, Srila Prabhupada was very pleased and he appreciated so much. Similarly, we can see similar situation here with Lord Brahma, because Brahma, he was completely upset with the Kumaras, and now this Manu, he has completely agreed to the proposal of Lord Brahma and he is ready to do whatever he says. And we can see in the next verse, Brahma would instruct Manu and he will start making the progenies. So this is an example of how one gets very pleased if somebody is not following anything, if somebody is ready to follow. Yes, very happy. This is the situation of all the devotees, because if you see the material world, no one wants to follow the instructions of the Lord, spiritual master or the Lord. So when devotees are trying to follow the instructions of the Lord becomes very pleased. The spiritual master becomes very pleased. So here, Brahma makes a very important point that this sort of adoration for the superior is required. So it's important to know who is superior. It is mentioned in the Shastra, in the Vaishnava etiquettes, that how can we understand who is superior? Of course, from our philosophy, we need to respect everyone. So when one has humility, one sees everyone as superior. But there are some checks and balances to know who is superior. It is said the first criteria is, or many criteria, the first one mentioned is the age. If somebody is superior by age, we do show respect. Even I am speaking in the devotee circle, if somebody is superior to us by age, we have to show respect. It doesn't matter, we may be, may know more or we may be advanced, but still, we show respect according to the age. So that is one criteria. Second criteria for superiority is the position. In a society, what position they hold, we show respect according to the position. Because otherwise, it is not possible to have a peaceful governance of the society. So there has to be, position is respected. Then third, we can see the respect is given according to the varnashram system. According to the ashram, one is respected. For example, brahmachari is the least position. Then is the grihastha, then vanaprastha, and then sannyas. So these are the four. So actually the respect is given according to that. One is considered brahmachari as the least. Next is the grihastha, then vanaprastha, and then sannyas. Hierarchy is given. So it is very interesting that there are different criteria in this regard. For example, one time Vyasadeva was asked this question, which is the most important ashram? So Vyasadeva went inside a river, probably Ganges. He went inside Ganges and he meditated and he came back. And then he said, I have to tell you the truth. The best ashram is Grihastha ashram. So those who ask questions, other sages ask, how come Grihastha ashram is the best ashram? He said, this is the only one ashram who can support other ashrams. To maintain other ashrams, the only ashram that can support is Grihastha ashram. And also, to generate progenies, there is only one ashram. So that is Grihastha ashram. In that way, that's the best ashram. So this was the comment of Vyasadeva. In fact, that holds the responsibility of the Grihasthas. So there was an instruction by, I think, Ramanujacharya or Yamanacharya, I can't remember, one from the Sri Sampradaya. Before departing the world, he instructed his Grihastha disciples that you should see brahmacharis and sannyasis as your grandchildren. General instruction for the brahmacharis are seen as children. There is a general instruction. Generally, brahmacharis are considered as children because they are meant to be pure as children. So generally, brahmacharis are considered as children. But this particular acharya, I think it's Ramanujacharya, he instructed his grihasthas, you should see as grandchildren. All the renounced order, brahmacharis and sannyasis, you have to see as grandchildren. Meaning that you have to take care of them with affection. So this is a very responsible position, and that is very much laudable. So that's what I'm trying to say is, okay, there is a hierarchy, but at the same time, there are different hierarchies and there are different dynamics in the whole Varnashram system. It is not just linear. There are different principles that apply, that play at different times according to time, place and circumstances. It's very important. Then it is the hierarchy is defined in terms of the initiation. So when one is initiated, depending on that, there is a hierarchy. But one shouldn't be fanatic on that. You know, somebody got initiated maybe 1 month back, so I am superior. Or, you know, one day, or I got the bead before you. So this is completely irrelevant, you know. So it is, okay, it can be considered, you know, with a long period of time, we understand, okay, he's a devotee initiated much before me. But not like, you know, coming to the time scale, you know. 1 minute, second, it's not an Olympic race, you know, where even microseconds and, you know, milliseconds are being counted. So, even though this is a criteria for hierarchy. Then, it is said the ultimate criteria of hierarchy or the superiority is based on spiritual advancement. That is considered as the highest measure. If somebody is spiritually advanced, no matter what, one has to show respect. So, that is considered as the highest criteria for the superiority. So here we can see in relation, we can see the superiority in terms of relation. For with respect to Kumaras, with respect to Swayambhu, Manu, Shatarupa, and further to come, Brahma is superior. Right? And if we just focus on one thing, we can be completely misled. That's what happened to Daksha. Daksha saw the whole situation in the Dakshayagya, in the material point of view, and he primarily saw only one thing, that, okay, he saw Shiva, he's a useless fellow. That was the opinion of Daksha, because, you know, we look at his dress, look at his eyes, look at his jata, seeing everything, he completely offended Lord Shiva, and he also said, my daughter is like a deer cub, and he is like a person who has monkey's eyes. So this was the way he was insulting Lord Shiva. So here the point was why he got completely agitated, because he only saw one thing, that Lord Shiva didn't pay respect to me. I am the father-in-law and he is my son-in-law, because Lord Shiva is married to my daughter and he didn't show respect to me by paying obeisances. So look at the position of Daksha. Daksha just picked on just one point. He forgot to see everything else. It is mentioned, Srila Prabhupada very nicely mentions that what is the position even on a material ground, what is the position of Daksha and what is the position of Lord Shiva? It is mentioned, forget about Lord Shiva. Even think about his own daughter, Sati, who is the wife of Lord Shiva. What is the position of Sati and what is the position of Daksha? In that pastime, we can see that Sati burnt herself, but she has so much of power that she can burn so many Dakshas together. This is the power of Sati Devi. And what to speak about her husband, Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is the best among all the demigods. So, even on a material ground, Lord Shiva is superior. And what to speak about spiritual ground? We discussed that verse yesterday. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. That his consciousness is Vasudev. He is completely fixed in transcendental consciousness. So, spiritually he is completely elevated. And he was telling he is playing obeisances all the time to Krishna. And in that way he is respecting all the living entities. So, even if he doesn't get up and pay obeisances to Daksha, there is nothing wrong. But Daksha, he looked into only one eye, that is through the eye of the position. I am superior in my position in relation. So these are the different criteria we discussed in terms of, you know, the hierarchy. Now, when we try to understand this pastime, we can see that there is an obedience shown by, complete obedience shown by Daksha to, sorry, by Swayambhuva Manu to Lord Brahma. He is ready to fulfill all his desires. So here, Prabhupada mentions here that this obedience was on a material ground. So we can look at obedience on a material ground, which is also really good. See the current society. If you see the sons and daughters in the current society, how much are they obedient to their parents? Practically, they are not at all. It is not just the fault of the kids, but it is also fault of the parents, because parents are not taking trouble in training their kids, and also the consciousness in which the children are being generated, that is also questionable. So there's multiple reasons. So they don't have the proper training, and the jiva themselves who are coming, they are of lower nature. You can see, if you go to any places, there are havoc created by kids. I remember going to Geelong for book distribution sometime. So we have gone to Geelong many times for book distribution. So one time when we went to Geelong, what happened was there were more security guards, two permanent security guards near the whole bus stand. So these security guards were dedicated for that bus stand. So we asked the security guards, why such a situation? So they told that after they have this bus stand started, all the kids are just loitering there. And they are creating just a havoc. They are throwing stones. Most of them smoking. Just kids, you know, they are just smoking. They are on drugs. And, you know, we are distributing books. And, you know, some of them come to us and try to create some trouble. So when they try to create some trouble, we show the books and then tell them, you know, give us some money. Straight away, give us some money. When we ask money to them, they will run away. Money, when they hear money, then they just go away, because they know they are trying to get some money from somewhere. So this is the situation. Just kids, they are being completely misled. This is because of the parents. It's not just the kids, because of the parents. Because parents are creating children with wrong consciousness. Second, there is no training and there is no time for their kids. You just throw them somewhere after being kid. I met one person in last marathon, just near Southern Cross Station. He was, you know, he was in his 40s, late 40s. He was not looking very good. He was, you know, looks like a bit, you know, bit worn out. And I asked him, you know, I gave him a book, you know, started speaking. He was actually a nice man. So I told him, you know, what are you doing? So he said, look, when I was a kid, my parents disowned me. They just disregarded, you know, they just threw me out of the house. And he said, I just survived stealing things. I go to supermarket or shops, I steal something to eat. I grew up like that. Then I ended up in the jail for some time. And then I started some charity work, because I understood the position in this world. Children are not being taken care of. So he started some charity work. He made some money. He did good charity, some in Australia and some in Africa. He said quite a few things. Then he said, you know, he can help me to distribute these books. So he was quite favorable, and he took a book and he gave me some money. He didn't have much money, because he said he had money and he met with an accident. So after that he couldn't work, and, you know, he's on pension, so he's just living. So we could see how from childhood, how parents are, how irresponsible they are. Bhagavatam says the responsibility of a parent or a demigod, a guru, very clearly it mentions 5th canto, 5th chapter. Don't be a father. Don't be a guru. Don't be a demigod. Don't be a forefather. You know, unless and until one can deliver the dependence from the cycle of birth and death. So this is the qualification. So it's a big qualification. So yes, now even obeying on a material ground is highly laudable, as shown by Swayambhuva Manu in this example. And very interesting, what happens is when kids are being abused by their parents, even if they come to Krishna consciousness later in the age, later after some time, they have problem with the authorities, because they don't want to accept an authority. We can see many people have problem with the authorities. One reason is that the authorities in the life previously abused them. So they have already created scars in their consciousness and they really don't want to accept any authority. So this is the sad plight of the current society. However, when you see obedience on a spiritual ground, that is the essence of our sampradaya. It is the essence of any spiritual sampradaya. That is, we need to be obedient to our spiritual masters, actually. As we sing every day, Yasya Prasadat Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasada Nagadi Kutopi. By placing the spiritual master, we can get all spiritual success. And displeasing, we lose everything. You know, so many examples for that. And even in the, you know, even in the devatas are not exception for that. When they're displeased, Brihaspati, what happened? They lost everything. So this is the position. Pleasing the spiritual master is so important. And it has two aspects. One is the relationship between disciple and the spiritual master and father and the son. It has its significance. Obedience to the spiritual master. In fact, we know the pastime of Parashuram, right? Parashuram is known as Renukasuta, right? His father was Jamadagni. And his mother was Renuka. So one time, Jamadagni was a great rishi. When Renuka went to collect water from the river, one day while collecting the water, she just looked at a demigod. There was a demigod came there and she looked at the demigod with some attraction. And when she returned home, Jamadagni understood that she has been fallen down because she saw another man with some attraction. So what did Jamadagni do? Jamadagni called all his sons. And what did Jamadagni say to his son? Okay, ask one by one. Kill her. Kill your mother. Think about this. You know, he asked the first son, couldn't do it. No one was prepared to do that. It is very difficult. Think about it. But Parashuram, he straight away, he didn't think. He had his axe. He killed his mother. Think about this, you know. And who is Parashuram? Keshavadhirta Bhrugupati Rupa Jay Jagadisha Hare. He is the Supreme Lord. He is an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Lord. He killed his own mother. Then he knew. He is the Lord. So he knew what he is doing. It's not like any one of us. He knew that if I do this, my father has the power to give benedictions. So he will be pleased and he will give benediction. He gave the benediction. What is the benediction? Okay, whatever you want, you can ask me. Samparashram said, okay, bring my mother back to life. And also she shouldn't remember that I had killed her. Brothers also. So it's even more harder. So all of them came back to life and the problem was solved. So this is an example, an extreme example of following the instruction of father. So Parashuram did that because he knew what he's doing. We can't do that. Now, next is, you know, if you see, try to see obedience on a spiritual ground, we are completely dependent on our spiritual master. We are dependent on Srila Prabhupada. It is said one has to follow the instruction of the spiritual master without questioning. It's a very important point. One can try to understand the instruction. There is no problem in questioning in that way. How shall I do in this way or that way? What is the right way? That is okay. But a disciple shouldn't challenge or question in that way the spiritual master's instruction. So if we do that, already the mercy is reduced. If the spiritual master says, okay, do this. So if we try to execute the instruction, then we are carrying the mercy of the spiritual master and we are carrying the mercy of the parampara. However, we are questioning the spiritual master, then there is a blockage. We are placing ourselves in a position where we are already creating a war between us and the mercy which is actually coming through. So this is the position of a spiritual master. He is acting as a via medium to give the mercy from the Lord in the form of the instructions. And also he is acting as a via medium to carry whatever respect we are giving to the spiritual master, to his spiritual master, and ultimately to Krishna. So in both ways he is transparent. It's not a, it's like a two-sided valve, you know. It is this way the mercy is flowing, and the other way we are giving the respect, and the spiritual master is taking, and he is taking to his spiritual master, and ultimately to Krishna. Just like a tax collector, as Srila Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, I am collecting all the obeisances from everyone on the, in behalf of my guru and Krishna. So this is the position of a spiritual master. He's not thinking, I am doing it, I am taking all the respects. But he's just passing to his superiors. So this is parampara. And if we are considering disobedience, so we consider the obedience on a material ground. Here, Srila Prabhupada writes, the obedience of our Manu is on a material ground. And we can see the obedience in a spiritual ground. And yesterday we discussed quite a bit on obedience on a spiritual ground. We took the example of Srila Prabhupada. We discussed the example of first class disciple, second class disciple, and the third class disciple. And who is that third class disciple compared to? As a mutra, not as a putra, as a mutra. Just as useless as urine. So this is that we discussed. So now today, let's consider disobedience on a material ground. This is very serious, because it will completely spoil our spiritual life. Disobedience on a spiritual ground. And Shastras warn this very significantly. If you see Nectar of Instruction, that's why it is given, one shouldn't see spiritual master as an ordinary being. The example is given, there can be forms, there can be mud in the waters of Ganges, but one shouldn't see Ganges as ordinary. Similarly, apparently one may see some material defects in the spiritual master, but one shouldn't see them as defects. It's very important. There is a very classic example to this. Srila Prabhupada had a scholarly assistant, a Sanskritist. So Prabhupada used to consult him while doing the translation of verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was a professional Sanskritist. He used to know Sanskrit very well. So many verses Prabhupada used to discuss with him. He used to translate the verses and he used to write his purports. So when this continued for some time, then this Pandit started thinking that Prabhupada knows only whatever I know. Because he's asking me for, you know, different meanings of the word, you know, the Sanskrit grammatical rules. So my understanding and Srila Prabhupada's understanding are on the same platform. Or maybe I know a bit better. He started thinking like that, and he told this to Srila Prabhupada. Not in a submissive way, that okay, I have this problem, I'm thinking in this way. No. He told Srila Prabhupada that I want to find an advanced guru. Think about that. He rejected Srila Prabhupada and he went with another guru. This is very sad. This is extremely serious. If one rejects one guru who is, you know, who is on a high standing, that is the greatest offense. There's no hope. So think about this person who rejected Srila Prabhupada. Think about the caliber of Srila Prabhupada. And one can be, so this is the trick of Maya. Because he started seeing Srila Prabhupada on a material ground in terms of just the material learning, in terms of the grammatical rules. I know so many rules, he doesn't know so many rules in that way. So this is great fall down. So one has to be very careful when dealing with the spiritual master and the senior devotees. So many examples are there for this. You know, even we know the example of Ramachandra Puri, right? He started advising his spiritual master. Because Madhavendra Puri was crying because of ecstasy. He was feeling vipralambha bhav. He was feeling separation from Radha and Krishna. And he was chanting the verse, Aidina Dayatranathahe. He was calling Dayatranathahe, you are the Lord of one who is distressed. Madhuranatha kimalakyasi. Hridayam tat aloka kadaram daida brahmitikim karomyaham. What can I do? He was calling out for Krishna in the following, in the footsteps of Srimati Radharani. When Krishna left Vrindavan to Madhura, Krishna is addressed as Madhuranatha. He is the master, he is the lord of Madhura. So Radharani was feeling separation, and so this verse is in that mood. So that's why we say that Madhavendra Puri actually carried the mood of Raja Bhakti. The spontaneous devotional service, that mood was carried by Madhavendra Puri. So he is considered the seed of spontaneous devotional service. So he is considered the seed of that bhakti, Vraja Bhakti. And that got fructified and came out as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the trunk of the creeper of Bhakti Lata. So this is the, sorry, he is the trunk of the tree of Prema, the tree of love for Godhead. So now we see that, so Ramachandra Puri, what he did? He started addressing, why are you crying? Because the one who has to be Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, one has to be on Brahman platform. Why are you crying like this? You come to the Brahman platform. So Ramachandra Puri became even more upset. I am first of all distressed because of my separation. And I am almost in a stage where I am going to leave my body. And this rascal is addressing me that think about the Brahman. So this was Madhavendra Puri. And he chastised Ramachandra Puri and said to him, you go away, never, don't show your face again to me. So that is the glory of Ishwara Puri, where he served him in a very obedient way. And it is said that Madhavendra Puri allowed to do such menial service that he couldn't do anything, practically speaking. And Ishwara Puri got all the opportunity to serve all in all menial ways to his spiritual master. It is considered the greatest mercy. And so, because he got the mercy, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the disciple of Ishwara Puri. So this is the mercy he got from the spiritual master. So even Madhavendra Puri was not the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but his disciple became the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is the potency of mercy of the spiritual master. So it is mentioned that if we can see, when some spiritual masters, when they are going through the disease conditions, you know, the servants, they are getting the opportunity to serve them in a very intimate way. It is considered the mercy of the spiritual master. Actually, the spiritual master is allowing his disciples to serve and he is giving his mercy. Recently, we can see how His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaja's servants were taking care of him so nicely. It's very, you know, very, very powerful. In fact, I heard a message from His Holiness Radhanand Maharaj to the servants of Jayapataka Maharaj. So Maharaj was encouraging and telling them that how, what kind of service they are doing. He is telling how important their service is to their spiritual master. And how they have to see it as an opportunity and as a mercy. So this is, it is a very great example how the disciples, the devotees are serving their spiritual master. They are getting so much of mercy. They are getting so much of empowerment from their spiritual master. So this is very important. Now, at the same time, if somebody is disobeying on a material ground, then there is no hope, just like Ramachandra Puri. We can see, you know, so many examples even in Shastra. Kamsa, what did Kamsa do? His father, he had his father Ugrasen, right? What he did with his father?
Put
him in the jail. So this is, you know, in a material circumstances, although we can see in the history, if you study the history of the tyrants, we can see a great many of them, they put their father, mother, or their brother, whoever, they either kill or put them in the jail, they do anything, right? In fact, there was a statement by Mao, you know, the Mao, the Chinese, you know. Mao Zedong. His wife made a very interesting statement. He said that generally people think that the most attractive thing is sex. People are quite addicted to sex. That's the most addictive thing. But he said, so she said that the most addictive thing is power and control. Because people don't have the experience of power. That's why they are not addicted to that. But she is mentioning she has that. So she was mentioning that is very addictive. So to maintain that, they are ready to do anything. Now we can see all the tyrants. You know, even we can see the example. Prabhupada often says the story of Shah Jahan, the novel Shah Jahan, in a different context. But you know, we can see he was in the jail. Who put him in the jail? His own son, right? Aurangzeb. Look. So this is, you know, disobedience, even on a material ground to the extreme. Because they are envious of their own father. And if there is a disobedience on a spiritual ground, that is permissible. That is the example here given. who's the example, classic example for that. Even at the beginning of the creation, there was a disobedience on a spiritual ground. The four Kumaras, they disobeyed their father, and Prabhupada writes that it's okay, even though it can be abominable on a material ground, but on a spiritual ground it is acceptable. And think about the position of the Kumaras. They are the manifestation of Jnana Shakti of the Supreme Lord. So by birth, they are Brahman realized. And they had no interest whatsoever to have progenies or to do anything to rule the world or anything like that. So when Brahma asked, okay, create children, they said, you know, we can't do that. And you had to understand, they are so sense-controlled that they could remain as kids for such a, you know, all the time. They are kids all the time. Can we control our senses that we don't grow old? We can't. But the Kumaras are so sense-controlled that they remain kids. So they remain pure all the time. Naishtik. So they are Naishtik Brahmacharis. So this is the disobedience on a spiritual ground. It is applicable in our lives also, for example. It is said one can disobey the spiritual master. One can disobey father. It is acceptable. For a spiritual master, even when we write the initiation exam, there is a question, right? What are the conditions on which we can reject one spiritual master? It is explained by Narahari Sarkar that if spiritual master is deviating from the principles, that is one reason. One doesn't have to, and if actually said one can even accept that, if he is not following, still one doesn't have to reject one spiritual master. But if he becomes inimical to the devotees, and if he becomes actually opposite to the devotional service, then one has to reject. So these are the conditions in which one has to reject even one's own spiritual master. And it does clearly applies to one's own father also. If they are inimical, or you know, one, or if they are against our spiritual life, the instructions are against our spiritual life, then one may have to reject. So there are conditions. Otherwise, we don't. Even you say for a brahmachari, if he joins the ashram, there can be opposition from the family. It's very natural. So we cannot follow the instructions of our fathers. It's not possible. It's not practical. One can disobey. It is acceptable. In this regard, His Holiness Radhanand Maharaj makes a very interesting statement. He said, it is acceptable, but such a devotee should do devotional service properly. One shouldn't make a show of it. To neglect one's duties. But one should actually do devotional service properly. Then one has all the right to disobey the instructions of one's father. If it's not favorable to spiritual life, one has to do that. So this comes to the point that, you know, how can we deal with even our family? Because it is very important that we have some relation with our family. And as devotees, we have to be very careful in dealing with our families, in both sides. One cannot be too attached or one cannot be too detached. One has to be very, very clear while dealing with the family. Especially when the parents are not devotees. It is a very tricky situation, but it's a very important situation. And the situation can vary how one is situated, in which ashram one is situated. One is a brahmachari or a grihastha, it varies. So for example, or as a principal ground, one need to have a good relation to the family. Even for a brahmachari, we try to have a good relation with our family. We don't try to create a negative impression. Right? First of all, devotees are loving by nature. Second, we need a favorable opinion from them towards the whole Krishna consciousness movement. So it is very important to have a good relation, but not compromising our spiritual principles. So this is the check and balance. If we think, okay, we want to be good with them, at the same time we have to compromise all spiritual principles, then there is no point. So a brahmachari may not be able to physically support parents. It is not within the boundary of the ashram. It is outside the boundary of the ashram. So a brahmachari cannot support the parents. But at the same time, one can have a good relation, one can speak to them, you know, one can have a, so they feel comfortable, can have some relation with them. In that way, one can have decent relation, so that they feel comfortable with us, they feel comfortable with the whole society. Otherwise, they think they are all just fanatical. We have put so much of effort in them, but they are denying us completely. So they feel very bad. So that is not really good. So one needs to have a, you know, a balanced relationship. But when it comes to grihastha, it is mentioned that grihastha need to have more, they have to be more close to the family, even if they are not devotees. You know, if they are completely inimical or creating troubles all the time, okay, it's a different story. Otherwise, one has to be more close to the family. And one needs to support the family. In, it depends on the circumstances, in what way and to what degree. But the general principle of support remains. So for that, one may need to understand the particular situation and one may have to take guidance. But as principle, a grihastha has more responsibilities towards the family, towards the parents. So that's the Vedic system. So in the classical Vedic system, definitely grihasthas will look after their parents completely. There is no doubt about it. But in the Kali Yuga, in the current system, things can vary. There can be some variations in this principle, in this details, but the principles remains as it is. So one has to be mindful about that. Otherwise, if one is neglecting one's parents because one thinks it is just a trouble, it is completely wrong. Even if you are devotees. Especially if one is a grihastha, if you think, you know, looking after the parents, it is a trouble, so I shouldn't do it. It's just because it is trouble. So one is in a totally a wrong mentality. There can be exceptions. One is fully engaged in Krishna service, even a grihastha, and there's no time, then Krishna will make sure that there is some arrangement for them. One may not be able to support financially or physically so much, so Krishna makes some arrangement. So we cannot just blindly quote the verse, you know, Deva Shri Bhutapandranam Patrinam Nakingaro Nayam Rani Charajan Sarvatmana Yasharanam Charanyam Gatomagundam Parikriti Kartam. We cannot just quote that verse blindly. Yes, it has its application, but one need to be very careful. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, bro.
Thank you for a very nice lecture. Three things came to my mind. One was Hari Maharaj.
Yeah.
He rejected.
That's right.
And number two was Bhishma Pitamaha. He rejected his spiritual master. He actually fought with his spiritual master because his spiritual master wanted to marry a girl from him. So he fought.
And he was pleased also.
And
like Parashuram, right?
Yes, sir.
He was Parashuram was pleased being defeated. So, was defeated, yeah?
Yeah. And in Vishnu Puran, there is a very good discussion. Even Lord Vishnu came to Manu Maharaj and told him how Lord is coming as Master Avatar and what he has to do.
Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
You are talking about disobeying the parents' words, instructions. They brought us to this world.
Yes.
So, we don't know. I don't know who has seen Krishna. I don't know. Have you seen Krishna?
Sorry, it's a question. I gave a whole class on that. I think you had to refresh back to.
Sorry?
You had to refresh back to the class I gave maybe last week. It was a whole. I gave, you know, 20 minutes explanation on seeing Krishna. Okay, you continue. I think you continue your question. I'm not going to comment on that now.
That was Prabhu's question.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, Prabhu's question. I know, that's why I told you.
So,
Just before completing the question, just hold on. Let's complete that statement so then you can continue. That you can disobey the orders of your biological parents if it is against our spiritual principles. You understand? No, understand the full thing. And now you can ask the question. Okay. Thank you. Any other? Yes, Prabhu. Whether he rejected?
Did he reflect on that? Is it known that he was to write down how he was hurt by that or how he would guard against that next time?
I don't think so. Srila Prabhupada is transcendental. I haven't read anything specifically on that. Yeah. Maybe, but I haven't at least seen. Priyavrata's rejection was on a spiritual ground in the beginning, right?
Priyavrata, they asked him to do with the earth, and he was very advanced, he was meditating,
yeah.
He was really attached to it, and he didn't want to get entangled.
That's right. Everyone was there. Brahma was there, Manu was there, Narada was there, all the demigods were there, so it was a big assembly on Gandhamadana Hill, yeah. Nice point. Any final questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.